We're in the book of Job. My wife said, are you sure you want to enter the holiday season with Job? And I said, no, I don't. I didn't want to do Romans when we did it. But the Lord said, yeah, you do. And you know, the thing is the reason I didn't want to do Job is because Job's a hard book. I look at Job and I see myself at times complaining and whining. I see people with difficulties. And then I stop and say, wait a minute, is that not life? Is that not where we're at? And so as we looked last week, Job is the first book of poetry. It's the oldest book of the Bible. It was written prior to the writings of Genesis and Exodus, though they have obviously activities and events that happened prior to Job. But Job was written long before then, and actually Job's one of the oldest books in history, which asks one of the oldest questions of history is, why do bad things happen to good people? You know, I can answer that. There aren't any good people. There's none good, no, not one. And as we find out that things just happen, it's neither good nor it's bad. Things happen, and we judge them good or bad. And so, as Job will see, sometimes the answers don't come. And because the answers don't come in the way we think they should or in the time frame that they should, it can lead to doubt. It can lead to depression, discouragement. Last week, we talked about how so many people either demonize doubt or they idolize doubt. They demonize it by saying, hey, I can't talk about doubt. I can't question my faith. And so all my questions are hidden. They're stored inside. I don't share them with anybody. And so when they finally work their way out, not if, but when they work their way out, it's a monster. It's a Godzilla of a kidney stone. sorry. So they either demonize doubt or they idolize doubt, and they say, you know what? This is the catalyst of me just to rebel of everything I've ever believed in. I knew it, and I'm leaving. I'm finished. And you have these polar things, and what really needs to happen is some room to talk and room to talk with God and with others and have some heartfelt dialogue. We looked at Galatians chapter 6, when it talks about restoring such a one in the spirit of gentleness. And God has called believers to restore believers, to stand in the gap, and with a spirit of gentleness. And so many times we could be, oh, I got the answer. It fits like this. 1, 2, 3, and then there's number 4. Well, life doesn't work that way. And sometimes we need to stop and be okay with maybe not completely agreeing, but having an ear for someone who's really struggling. Last week we talked about doubt. The word doubt really means to be two-minded. And the pain it is to be two-minded, to have these things that are pulling you back and forth. James says that a double-minded man is what? He's in all of his ways and dizzy and painful, and it's not fun to be in doubt. And so we who are spiritual are to restore, recognizing that they're going through a difficult time. And Job was a man who seemed to have it all together. We know people that seem to have it all together. But if you've been a Christian long enough, you realize that nobody has it together. Job feared God. Bad things don't happen to people who fear God. Job had 10 kids. His quiver was full. Job was wealthy. And yet, in a moment, he lost everything. Whew, it was gone. And we are going to have this vantage point. We have the vantage point of looking at Job's life. We see the framework that Job never saw. We see the conversation in heaven with Yahweh and with Satan, and we see all that, and we recognize that God's doing something Job didn't know. And so doubt came in, discouragement came in, and we can watch him through his struggle, but we get to watch him find his faith again. As we said, the framework is not very poetic. It's just pretty matter of fact. It's the poetry goes all between chapters 3 through like 42, 41. But the framework is that Satan approached God. And God says, hey, what are you doing? I'm out and about looking for people to eat up. Well, have you considered my servant Job? And at that point, Job goes, what? And we see that word consider is the military word to scout out or to do reconnaissance, to look at a city, to how to capture it and to destroy it. And God says, have you considered my servant Job? He fears God. He's an upright man. He's perfect. That word perfect means mature, complete. He's a complete man. He's not a boy, he's a man. And Satan says, yeah, I've seen him. You've blessed the work of his hands, his possessions. Stretch out your hand and touch what he has, and he will curse you to your face. So the Lord allowed him to do that. In a moment, Satan destroyed everything, all of his cattle, his kids, everything. And Job's response was what? The Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Job worships the Lord in the moment of despair. It's easy to worship God when things are going great. It's when it's tough that we have to make a conscious decision that's right. God loves me, and I may not understand what's going on. I may not know what's going on, but I know who does. And Job worships the Lord. And then the second approach. Satan comes back again. The guy's got tenacity. You got to admit it. Goes up to the Lord again. And where have you been? Looking for people to eat up. Have you considered Job? Yes, I have. And that's the scary thing. Satan has looked for opportunities to discourage and to destroy. Has anyone been discouraged this week? $10. It's the enemy. We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, do we? Yes, all that a man has, he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face, says Satan. God says, okay, just don't take his life. And he covers him with boils from his head to his feet, so bad that he's scraping himself with a broken clay pot, scraping off these boils, these oozing boils, and he's sitting in an ash heap, this area of humility and mourning. And it says, in all this, Job did not sin with his lips. And then he had three friends. Three friends came to visit Job, and you know what? They came for 7 days, and they didn't say a word. For 7 days and seven nights, they sat there, and they just were blown away. I mean, they didn't even recognize Job till they got up close. Who is this guy? I don't know. Let's go around. Whoa, that's Job. Job. Keep in mind, this is Jewish poetry as we read this, but yet it's true to life. And so let's look at verses 1 through 10. Job curses the day. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. And Job spoke and said, may the day perish on which I was born, and the night in which it was said, a male child is conceived. May that day be darkness. May God above not seek it, nor the light shine upon it. May darkness and the shadow of death claim it. May a cloud settle on it. May the blackness of the day terrify it. For as for that night, may darkness seize it. May it not rejoice among the days of the year. May it not come into the number of the months. Oh, may that night be barren. May no joyful shout come into it. May those who curse it, who curse the day, those who are ready to arouse Leviathan, may the stars of its morning be dark. May it look for light but have none and not see the dawning of the day. Because it did not shut up the doors of my mother's womb, nor hid sorrow from my eyes. Wow, this guy sounds a little down. He sounds like he's depressed. And there are times when we think, you know what? I wish that day just never happened. I wish we could just take that day off the calendar, boop, and we're going to start all over again. I like how the Bible says that his mercies are new every morning. And so I purposely take naps throughout the day that my morning starts over, and it's like Groundhog's Day, over and over again for me. But he starts off by saying, after this, Job opened his mouth. After this, after what? After two waves of the enemy hitting him, like wave after wave after wave, losing his family, losing his property, losing his health and his dignity. And Job begins to think. Notice a subtle difference between chapter 1, verse 22 and chapter 2, verse 10. I'll read them. Chapter 1, verse 22 says, in all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. No sin found in Job's life after all these things happened. He didn't bail out and say something dumb or do anything. And then in chapter 2, verse 10, it says, in all this, Job did not sin with his lips. 7 days, not a word, not even a cry out to the Lord. Did you know that 7 days without prayer makes 1 week? 7 days, not praying. 7 days, I call it stinking thinking. Have you ever been there? Just think about, oh my goodness, I can't believe that. And it gets worse. And the more you think about it, the worse it is. And he's getting to the place where he says, you know what? Why was I even born? And Job curses the day of his birth. He curses the night of his conception. And in his pain, in his frustration, he forgets the unexpected joy of childbirth. Carrying a child for 9 months, it's its highs, its lows. You know, I remember when Daniel was born, when Rebecca was born, and I remember watching the agony in my wife's face. But when those kids were born, things changed. There was joy. And for Job to say, I wish I was never born, would rob my wife, his parents, of joy. To curse the day of his birth was to rob other people. And though Job never questioned, though Job questions his life, excuse me, he never tried to take his life. Throughout this, you'll see Job just go, oh, why am I here? I want to die. But he never takes his life or tries to take his life. And I want to just spend just a minute on that. Did you know that suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States? That kind of doesn't surprise me, but it's alarming nonetheless. I say it doesn't surprise me because I read about it over and over again with our military, guys who come back. There's an epidemic with our youth, not understanding the value that God places on them. They've bought into the lie that they don't have any worth. They think that life would be easier without them. They think that life would be so much easier for their family if I was just gone. I read it wasn't a bumper sticker, but I don't know where I read it. It says, suicide doesn't stop the pain, it just passes it to others. And we need to remember that when we're dealing with people who are discouraged and depressed, they may not be at that place, but we can keep them far from that cliff's edge. We can keep them far from that by reminding them of the light of the day, that Jesus, the light of the world. That type of thinking is selfish and soulish. James says that this wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, it's sensual, and it's demonic. For where envy and self-existing exist, confusion and every evil things are there. But the wisdom that's from above is first pure, then peaceable, it's gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. That word for sensual is interesting. It means soulish, really. It's the same word that Paul uses when he talks about the natural man does not understand the things of the spirit, for the spiritually discerned. That natural, that soulish, that all about me. And sometimes we can get that way. I know the truth, but it's dealing with me. We're talking about me here. That type of thinking is demonic. That type of thinking is soulish and earthly. And we need to remember that we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. The enemy desires, he hated Job, and he hates our loved ones. Newsflash, he hates you. We have an adversary. But Jesus Christ, the righteous, has overcome. And in all of this, we have to look at where Jesus is at. There's a guy that works with my wife at his bank. His name's Jesus, and I need help. I'm looking for a WWJD bracelet that I can give him for Christmas because I want him to know what would Jesus do. But anyway, all that aside, we need to remember when things are strong, when things are going wrong, that we need to restore people in a spirit of gentleness. Galatians 6. Just underline that, highlight that. Galatians 6, that spirit of gentleness. You who are spiritual, or because you are spiritual, restore. Restore. Stand in the gap. Recognize that you have an adversary. And Job questions, why was I even born? In verses 11 through 19, he starts to question his life. And it's an interesting thing. He says, why did I not die at birth? Why did I not perish when I came from the womb? Why did the knees receive me, or why the breast that I should nurse? For now, I would have lain still and have been quiet. I would have been asleep. Then I would have been at rest with the kings and counselors of the earth who build ruins for themselves, or with princes who had gold, who filled their houses with silver. Or why was I not hidden like a stillborn child, like infants who never saw the light? There the wicked cease from their troubles, and there the weary are at rest. There the prisoners rest together. They do not hear the voices of the oppressor. The small and the great are there, and the servant is free from his master. Interesting questions, and I think people ask that. Why? Well, the Lord doesn't just come right out and answer it, but listen to what the Lord, when the Lord does answer Job in chapter 38, it takes a while for him to get there, but he says this. Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Job, you don't know what you're talking about. Who do you think you are? Now prepare yourself like a man, and I will question you, and you will answer me. That is one conversation I don't want to have with the Lord. And he goes on over and over and over again. Were you there when I shut the sea's doors? Have you commanded the morning since your days began? But if you scroll down on verse 17, he says, have you seen the gate of death? Has the gates of death been revealed to you, or have you seen the doors of the shadow of death? Job, you don't understand what you're talking about. Have you seen it? And Job begins to say things he doesn't understand, that the still would be quiet, the sleep would be, he'd be sleeping, he'd be at rest. There'd be a cease from trouble. And God says, Job, you're mistaken. And if you really want to know what happens to the other side of the grave, you need to see what Jesus says. Jesus is the one that really knows what happens the other side of the grave. In Luke chapter 16, Jesus tells us a story about a man by the name of Lazarus. Now, it's not a parable. Parables will say something like, the kingdom of heaven is like. Parable, para, means to be beside. And so a parable is a spiritual application that's tossed alongside a true-to-life event. That's what a parable is. Jesus names the man, and he says, there was a man named Lazarus. He was a beggar. He lived outside of a rich man's house. And one day, Lazarus dies, and the rich man dies. And both, they find themselves in the place of the dead. We call this Hades. Lazarus found himself in Abraham's bosom, while the rich man found himself burning in Hades, in where the wicked are found. And the wicked man looks over and he sees Lazarus in the arms of Abraham and says, Abraham, have Lazarus come on down here and dip his finger in some water and to quench my agony. Does it sound like he's at rest and the troubles have ceased? No, he's in torment. And Abraham said no. And even if he could, even if I would let him, he can't. There's a chasm between you two. There's no way. We'll send him back to see my brothers. No. You can't get there from here. That's right. No. And Jesus tells us that there is this place that was called Abraham's bosom that the righteous would go. And the righteous would stay there, and the righteous would be in Abraham's bosom, is also known as, who can tell me for a brownie? Paradise. There we go. Bing, 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 bing. So, okay, for two brownies, who can tell me what happened to Abraham's bosom? Ephesians 4, ring a bell to anybody? Jesus led captivity captive. It says in Ephesians 4 that Jesus came down. He led captivity captive. When Jesus went down to the lower parts of the earth, he led captivity. He emptied Abraham's bosom. Hades, the place where the rich man was at, remains. But Jesus led captivity captive to heaven, so much so that actually in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, I'm going to turn there now, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, listen to what Paul says about this. He says, for we know that if our earthly house, this tent, is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan, earnestly desire to be clothed with our habitation, which is from heaven. If indeed, having been clothed, we shall not be found naked, for we who are in this tent groaned, being burdened, not because we want to be unclothed, but further clothed, that mortality may be swallowed up by life. Paul is telling us a mystery here. This is new information. Hey, this old body, compared to what God has in store, is a tent as compared to a house. This is a tent. This is temporary. And God has an eternal house of spiritual body for you. And then he goes on to say, he says in verse 5, now he who prepared us for this very thing is God, who also has given us the Spirit as a guarantee. So we are always confident, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we're absent from the Lord. For we walk by faith, not by sight. Verse 8, we are confident, yes, well pleased rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. Paul is teaching us a mystery that while we're in the body, we're absent from the Lord. But when we're absent from the body, we're in the presence of the Lord. When a believer dies, he is immediately in the presence of the Lord in heaven. Immediately. There's no soul sleeping. Job thought, oh man, this is going to be great. I can just rest. I don't know if there's bonbons in his dream, this delusion. But if you ask the rich man, it's hell. And it's a vacation compared to the lake of fire. But this place is hard. And so Job doesn't know what he's talking about. I like in Philippians chapter 1, you can turn there with me. I don't think I have it behind me. I might. Verses 21 through 24, it says, for to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. But if I live in the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor. Yet what shall I choose? I cannot tell. For I am hard pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you. Here Paul has this debate in himself going, man, for me to live is Christ. I'm in ministry. I am serving my Lord. But to die is gain. Why? Because I'll be in the presence of the Lord. And I would rather be in the presence of the Lord. But for you, it's needful that I'm here, that I can instruct you some more. So I'm here in ministry to instruct you and to build you up. So I choose to be here because God has a ministry for me here. And until the day he calls me home, I'm giving 110%. And that is where we need to be at. If you're going to be restoring people, we need to recognize God has a will and a plan for you. And until he's done, you're bulletproof. We were praying earlier, and Jeff was saying something. He said, do you know that? He's saying, Lord, Every day is a gift to us. And what we do in these days is a gift to you. What gifts are we giving the Lord? Are we fulfilling the ministry God has called us to? Are we reaching out to people? Are we doing what God's called us to do? And having the mindset of, it's not what it's in it for me, not my will, but your will. I used to ask the question, how many of you asked the question, God, what's your will for me? We've all asked that. But when we have this mindset, it changes to, God, what's your will for me? To, God, what's your will? And I just want to follow it. I just want to follow wherever your will is at. You are not your own, Corinthians tells us. We've been bought with a price. For none of us lives to himself. No one dies to himself. For if we live, we live to the Lord. If we die, we die to the Lord. Therefore, whether we live or die, we're the Lord's. And we need, those are the words of comfort that we bring and we prepare ourselves as we minister to people who, like Job, have forgotten the joy. It's difficult. I know life's difficult. I have to stop and remind myself, that's right, God loves me. For the joy set before him, he endured. Not only just endured, he endured the cross. When Christ is the center of the universe, the questions change. Now, from why do bad things happen to good people to where's Jesus and how can I follow him? That's really the question. Where's Jesus in all of this? Where do I find Jesus? Job asks the next question, verses 20 through 26. He asks, why does death delay? Many times visiting different people, they'll ask, why am I still here? I can remember Shirley Gardano asking me that very question. I can remember my grandmother asking that question. We'll get there in a second. Let's look at Job, verses 20 through 26. Why is the light given to him who's in misery and to the bitter of soul who long for death? Verse 21, who long for death, but it does not come and search for it more than hidden treasures, who rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they find the grave. Why is light given to a man whose way is hidden and whom God has hedged in? For my sighing comes before I eat, and my groanings pour out like water. For the thing I greatly feared has come upon me, and what I dreaded has happened to me. I'm not at ease, nor am I quiet. I have no rest, for trouble comes. And here Job, this is poetry here, and so you've got these phrases kind of going back and forth, but Job's basically saying, why am I still here? Man, everything is taken away from me. I curse the day I was born. I don't understand. I would rather die and rest. Why is death so slow? And I went to Fort Bragg a couple of years ago and visited my grandma. And her and another Christian woman just said, Dave, why are we still here? And I'm thinking, Grandma, you kind of shared the Bible with me. You're asking the wrong guy. The one you want to talk to is Jesus. That's really the question. And so, I'm not the one you should be asking. But the two things I can say is God's purpose. And I said, Grandma, you're here to pray for me. You're here to pray for all your grandkids and your children. Grandma, you're here to pray. There's not much you can do. You're lying here. You sit up. You eat. The question isn't, is God glorified in all this? The question is how is your witness through it all? I can remember the day when I was sitting in my house. I've told you guys 100 times. I'll tell you another 100 times because it's a great story. Lord, how are you glorified with my hips, my bad hips? How does my pain bring you glory? I don't get it. Night after night, I would pray that. Because it used to be I'd have some bad days, and I had more bad days. Then I had more bad days than good days. And then guess what? There weren't any good days. And I'm sure Jennifer has been in situations like, Lord, how are you glorified in this? And then finally, it's like, okay, Lord, you know what? I don't care how you're glorified in it. I'm going to walk with integrity for you. The Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. I don't have to know why. I don't have to know why. My witness for everyone else to see. And that's what I told my grandma. I said, you know what? You're here for your purpose is to just to follow God's will. And two, your witness. How are you walking through the middle of it all? It's so funny. I had the same conversation with Pauline just yesterday. Pauline said, Dave, why is he still here? And I said, you know what? Only the Lord knows. But how are you doing? His destiny is sure. Your destiny is sure. How are you walking through it is what's really important right now. And how we walk through is everything. Because you know what? God said, have you considered, have you looked for a weakness in this man? And he said, oh, I found one. I found a couple. But God used Job as a trophy, and God uses us as trophies. That's my daughter. I am so proud of her. That's my boy. Look at him. And we see these giant trials as I can't believe another one. And you know what? They won't go away. I can remember being young and telling my wife, we're never going to have any money. We're just always going to just make it every time. And I said, you know what? I'm going to get used to it. I'm going to get used to it. I don't know why I work hard. I work hard because it's the integrity of my witness, but I don't work hard for money. I don't. The trials come, the trials go. They say that you're either in a trial, you're coming out of a trial, or guess what? You're going into a trial. It's what it's all about. So God gave us his son. God gave us his word. God gave us his spirit. And God gave us each other to be the pillar and foundation of truth. We're the ecclesia, the church of the living God. And there are times when I need to lean on you and you need to lean on me and we all need to lean on each other as we just press into the Lord. I don't know what it is, but sometimes when something hurts, we pull back. It's like we touch something hot and we pull back. We need to lean into Jesus. We need to just be able just to lean in more. Be transparent more. You know, the enemy doesn't like transparency. What he likes to do is he likes to take that little secret and just put it right there and then remind you of it. That nobody knows. That nobody knows. You're hurting inside. When Jesus says, you know what? Boldly come to the throne of grace. Transparently come to the throne of grace. Seven days without prayer makes one week. Elijah was a man of prayer. Elijah prayed and it stopped raining. Then he prayed and it started raining some more. Get praying, guys. Daniel was a man of prayer. Did you know that the only thing they can find on Daniel was that man prayed? And so that's what they used against him. Jesus rose people from the dead. Jesus healed blind eyes, touched lepers. Do you know what his disciples wanted to know? Lord, teach us to pray. You've got a relationship with the Father that's amazing. Teach us to pray. Teach us how we can just simply come to the Father. And I think that's the great thing is up before, until Jesus, he was just Yahweh. He was God. Actually, he didn't even say Yahweh, the name. But Jesus says, our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen. Jesus taught his men to pray. James tells us that the effectual prayer of a righteous man or woman availeth much. Keep praying. Keep praying. Make that your earmark. Make that your distinctive. Man, there are certain people I call when I need something, and I always call and I'll say, I called you because I know you pray. Because I know there are people that spend a lot of time at the throne of God. Those are the people you want to surround yourself. Those are the people you want to be like. That you would leave from the mountain with your face glowing. I fall back on a couple of verses on times like this. I think of Isaiah 55, when I don't understand what's going on, and maybe this doubt is coming in like a flood. I'm reminded when God says, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor my ways your ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. I'm glad that the Lord's thoughts are higher than mine. I'm glad that he's bigger than I can possibly think or imagine or even dare to dream. And then, of course, one of my favorite songs, I fall back to Romans 11, where it says, oh, the depths of the riches, both of the wisdom and the knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. For who has known the mind of the Lord? Or who has become his counselor? Or who is first given to him and it shall be repaid to him? For of him and through him and to him are all things, to whom be glory forever. Amen. And I equip myself, I have them in note cards. I have them in my car, on my phone that I can turn to. Why? Because I'm a leaky vessel. I'm just a regular guy who gets the privilege to share what the Lord's been sharing with me to a group of people. But I'm a normal man that struggles with just like you. And I have to turn to the Lord and say, Lord, I don't know. I don't know why that happened, but I know that all things work together for good. I know that, and you know that. And when we find ourselves in these areas of doubt, lean into the Lord. When your knees are knocking, kneel on them. Cling to the cross. Emmanuel, God with us. God with us. I want you guys to recognize, one of the reasons I went through Job, decided to go through Job, is because I'm crazy. And the other one was because we're all going through a hard time. We're either in a trial, we're coming out of a trial, or we're going into a trial. And we can either be like Job and be frustrated and have an ulcer. We could be like Job's wife and say, curse God and die. Or we can be a man of God and say, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.